Hello, this is Stephanie. No Gen Z today. And you're listening to WTF is Up with Gen Z, the podcast where we explore teen life in the digital era. And today we are joined by
Yashwardhan Sharma from Lucknow in India.
Yes, welcome. And how should the audience refer? Do you have like a nickname that you want to go by? Or do you
so my name's Yashwardhan, but I think Yash would be simpler. Let's stick with Yash.
Okay. Yes, Yash would be much easier for me to say over a Zoom call. So anyways, let me go over audience. What's happening here? So basically, as you heard in the last episode, I'm going to university. And this is Yash, who's also going to the same university as I am. And we connected over the internet, like most people do nowadays. And now he's here, and it's exciting. And Jesse's not here because this is kind of like our slow transition into when we're both in college and we'll have to do interviews ourselves. So that explains it. So I hope you don't miss Jesse. Well, I hope you do miss Jesse, but I hope it's okay that it's only me today. Anyways, so Yash is here. And can you quickly introduce yourself, some where you're from, which you already said, your age, hobbies, etc.
Sure. So my name is Yashwardhan. I'm from Lucknow in India. I'm 19 years old. I took a gap year after college, after high school, and now I'm going to college this fall. After my gap year, I'm interested in economics, history, and psychology, and I'm most likely going to be studying economics at Minerva, but let's see. And other than that, my interests include, I watch a lot of anime, so I like anime. I watch a lot of football, or as you know, you Americans say, soccer.
You Americans.
So, so yeah, those are things that I'm into.
Awesome. Well, I will just say, I'm on board with everyone calling Americans soccer, football, because it just makes sense. Like, American football is barely anything to do with the feet. So just my insert into global commentary, it should be football and the world is right and we're wrong.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, so first off, Yash has a really cool website called Tidings Media. So can you briefly explain what is Tidings Media?
Sure. So, you know, I've been working on this for the past 2.5 years and you would expect me to have like a perfect elevator pitch ready. The truth is I don't, because it's something that's always like evolving and I'm not really sure of. So as of this moment, Tidings Media is a website where we talk about economics and history. We write articles, we host workshops, we have our own podcast where we talk about economics and history. And yeah, it's just a platform where we aim to empower and inspire young economists, young historians, and this stems from my personal interest in economics and history and my strong beliefs that people should be studying these subjects and people should be writing about them. So it's a completely student-run, student-led platform where we discuss about economics, history, and everything in between.
And I guess a good foundational question is, how did you get interested in economics and history?
So I think I've been interested in history for a very long time, in the sense that as far as I can remember in grades like 6th, 7th, 8th, I've always been into history. I think if I were to guess, it stems from the fact that I was really into Percy Jackson's and Greek mythology when I was in grade 6th. So once I read about Greek mythology, I got into reading more about Greek history, and that got me interested in like Indian history and like world history in general as I grew up. So I've always had this fascination towards history. And the interest in economics is rather new. I was first introduced to the subject of economics in grade 11th. And I just remember that since the very first class, I found it to be very interesting. I think, you know, the first lesson in economics of the utility, marginal utility and stuff, you know, it was just so exciting that I can measure my happiness. You know, should I go out on the weekends or not? Should I eat this food or not? Something which I was, right after my first class, I was looking at things from like that perspective, very naively, but like still very fun and interesting. So it just made me feel like smarter in the sense that, you know, I can make wiser decisions when I did take this class. So from the very first economics class, I've always been interested in economics. And after high school, I still wasn't sure that, you know, this is something which I want to do. So after my school ended in 2020, once I finished high school, I took a gap year with the main intentions of, you know, exploring this subject deeper, reading more about it, talking to economists, talking to people who are in this field, and with just the intention of finding out if that is what I want to do, if it's something which actually interests me. And yeah, in the past year of my gap year, I've tremendously increased my fascination towards this field. So to the sense that I'm almost sure that I want to do this in college. So yeah.
See, that's really interesting to hear that you have such a strong interest in economics. From my perspective, our economics curriculum is lacking greatly, and we were only introduced to it this year, my final year of high school. And I do agree with you that you totally see the world in a different way. It's almost more, I don't know how to say, I would say logical than maybe an arbitrary understanding. And I guess in some ways it could be a reflection on almost a philosophical standing if you're looking at it from your own personal perspective, from like marginal benefit and utility. But then it's also interesting how it can be applied on such a grander scale. So it's really involved in everything. And that's really cool to see an actual teenager who's interested in it, because throughout this whole year, every teenager I've talked to has been dreading economics.
Yeah, I think I completely agree with that. And it's probably one of the reasons why I like economics, because of how broad it is. You have so many different fields in economics that you can, you know, use these tools of economics to apply to. So whether it is, you know, small problems like, should you go out on the weekends? Should you have that expensive food or not? Should you, what's like going to be your benefit of, you know, say not studying for test and instead going out? And those questions which we face in our daily lives, all of those things can also be influenced by our understanding of economics. And if you want to go for a larger scheme of things, how do we tackle poverty? How do we reduce the impacts of climate change? Why is there inequality in this world? How can we increase access to education? All of those larger problems are also things which we have in economy. So just because of how broad this field is what interests me. And it's always exciting to read about something new, some new problem, some new framework. So it's probably why I like this field, because I don't really have a very niche interest, because I get bored very easily. So I'm always looking for new problems, for new things to read and learn. And just because of how diverse economics is, I've always been intrigued by it.
Honestly, the way you phrase it and saying how applicable it is to all areas of everything, essentially, is actually getting me interested in economics again, and I just finished the course. And now I'm actually really interested in learning more. So I think you're doing a good job already at convincing me. And now, in regards to Tidings Media, why did you initially start it?
Sure. So just for some background, I'm like probably your typical Model UN kid. I've been doing Model UN for the past almost 7 years now. My first Model UN was in grade eight, when I was in grade eight. That was in 2015. So since then, I've been doing Model UN. And it's probably because when I was in high school, my high school didn't have like competitions. We didn't have clubs. We didn't have any other extracurricular opportunities. We only had one thing, just Model UN. So just in that environment that, you know, Model UN is the only thing that we can compete in, I've just grown to develop interest in that thing. So the idea or the inspiration behind Tidings Media comes from my background and my experience in Model UN. So This was in grade 11. I was looking for some kind of writing in internships because I was interested in writing. And that's where I came across that I did find like a writing internship, but there I was almost forced to just report instead of write. You know, if say there is an incident, if there is a topic, I was asked to objectively write about it instead of telling or adding what I feel about it. And I just did not like that. I believe that even though I'm not an expert, I would still want to have my say. You know, I still want to write about what I think of that topic. And that's where the idea came from. I spoke with a few friends of mine who also did Model UN like me, that, you know, we should have a platform where we let people like us, Gen Z like us, to talk about things, to discuss issues, whether it's our history, whether it's a topic of social justice, whether it is international news, like things happening around the world. We should have a platform where we can discuss and say what we feel. So in November of 2018, we began the work with the name Tidings Blog. At the time, we were called the Tidings Blog, and we were covering all kinds of news from international news, Indian news, history. I think history, along with news, is just because of my love for history and how I am interested in this field. So I just felt that it's really important for us to talk about stories, to talk about our history, and to learn about how we have come to our present today. So just because of those reasons and my experiences, we made a website in 2018, and ever since we've just been evolving. So there's that.
So I love how you just kind of took an idea, a concept, and you found just this need, and you're just like, I guess I'll do it then. So I guess when anyone thinks about a website, it usually is kind of an intimidating thing to jump into. For you, did you feel that same intimidation, and how did you find the motivation or skills to create a website?
So I think once I had this idea, and I'm not like most people who like who are really good planners, who think about stuff, what exactly will we do, how will we do it, where will we act, and all of those details. I'm more like someone who just has an idea, pursues it, and then figures out the details as we go on, and constantly like, you know, change up things and learn with trial and error. So that's like the way that I personally work. And when I was starting out, when we were starting out, we were just an Instagram page. And once we just, so, you know, we used to have a graphic, then we used to have a short text of 200, 300, 400 words in the Instagram description. And that's what we used for our Facebook page. That's how we be began the work. And then after a month or so, I think I saw that we could really make a website. And that wasn't the first thought because A, I didn't think I would want to like make it a big thing, and B, I didn't know how to make a website. I don't know how to code. I don't know how to design. So that wasn't the goal from the start. But then it was after like a month or two when we were walking, when we found lots of people who wanted to write for us. Once we thought that, you know, it would be a good idea to expand to a website, that's when I learned to sort of design myself because I didn't have the money to hire someone to make a website for us. And yeah, that's why I thought, you know, it's not going to be the best site, but let's give it a shot. And I looked up Wix. I used Wix to make our website. And in like a month or so, we had our Wix website up. Just not ideal because Wix has its pros and cons. But if you're just starting out and if you want the first step, if you want the easiest method to set up a website, it's probably going to be something like Wix or other, you know, drag and drop sites. So it is very intimidating to think of it, but because of these platforms like Wix, we can very easily set up a website within minutes.
Yes, I also made a website, and mine's definitely not to the extent that yours is yet. But again, I think the same thing is that a big barrier is people's ideas and then thinking of all the steps in between. And you seem to like have that ambition to just be like, let's do it and figure out along the way, which I is super cool and I think is good for anyone who wants to accomplish anything. You just kind of jump into the water and tread water, hopefully, and then just do it. And it's really cool, honestly. I guess, how did you get other students interested in helping out with the website?
Honestly, it wasn't tough because, like I said, I've been doing Model UN for a lot of time. So people in my immediate friend group, or my friends of friends, they were all people who did Model UN, who did debate. And once I made the page, once I made the first post, once I like pitched the idea to the social media platforms, I had lots of people who were interested to write for us to talk about these issues which are going around globally, whether it's things happening in Yemen, Syria, all of those international conflicts that we were discussing in Model UN. We had a platform to discuss them outside of Model UN and hopefully create some real world impact after discussing it for a 2-day or 3-day conference. So just because that my friend groups had people who did all this stuff, it wasn't really hard to find people who wanted to write for us.
And in terms of writing, do you have qualifications that you have for your contributors to the website? And how do you ensure that everything is, I guess, holds to fact versus finding and using bad resources?
Yeah, so for the first year, we did have an issue with this fact-checking because I really wanted us to have like a more objective website, even though it was a place for people to talk about things that they wanted to talk about and their own and form their own opinions on it. There was still a side of me that wanted us to, you know, not present fake news or something of that sort. So I really did try to have credible sources, but then in a few months I faced with this problem that it was really hard to verify things that were going on, you know, because I'm not somebody who is, you know, in the place where the conflicts are happening. You know, I'm just reading about it on the news, and my facts are based on things that I'm reading in big publications like BBC, New York Times, Al Jazeera, and more. And because it was hard to verify all of the facts, and we were facing some issues, we actually moved on from being just a news website to economic news website. So last year in 2020, we transitioned from being a website where we talked about Indian news, international news, global news, along with history. We moved from all of that to just economics and history. So we did not really have to worry about sources, credible facts, verifying news in this transition.
That's a really good way of solving the problem. Honestly, I like how you just consolidate to focus on what you know that you can provide reliable resources for. I think one of my next questions would be, how did you grow the website and reach more people?
Yeah, so once again, I didn't have the funds to actually have ads or something. So I was stuck with unpaid marketing, and I've always had this like this little interest in marketing. So I read about it further. I found some ways, I tried them out. And I think the main effective thing that has worked out for us has been something called niche marketing, which is basically that instead of promoting our work, promoting our articles everywhere, you know, spamming it to everyone across platforms, we focused on delivering our content to people who would actually read it. So I made a list of Facebook groups that were into economics and history, and we were promoting our articles into those economics groups. You know, say there was there's an article on a topic of world history, we would share that article into a group of world history and seek their opinions. Hey, what do you think of this topic? Do you agree? Do you disagree? Or here's an insightful take on this economic issue. What do you think about it? So once we were delivering our content to people who were in these large communities on Facebook and even Reddit, but for the most part, Facebook, we had lots of viewers who would read our content and comment on it and engage with us. And that was a really good way to have unpaid marketing, because we weren't really paying for anything. It was completely free, and it was very efficient because we had lots of traction, because these Facebook groups that I'm talking about have like 100,000, 200,000 people. And even if, say, 1% of that audience actually saw our post, then that would be a lot of traction for us.
For sure. And then, so on your website, you say that you have reached over 950,000 people. Does that number, like, shock you? Are you kind of like, whoa, by that? What is your reaction to that reach?
It's definitely really exciting. So that number includes our website views and also our social media reach. And that number is just since April of 2020, because before that time, I didn't really care about the numbers. I wasn't tracking anything. I didn't even have like a Google Analytics setup, which views how many site views you get. So those numbers are just in like the past 14 months, because it's June right now. And as of May, we've reached about 940,000.
That's literally, it baffles me. It's really shocking and super impressive. And you have over 225 articles published and 165 countries reached. It's just, how do you feel in regards to being only a teenager and being able to accomplish this? Was this something that you thought you would have such a big reach? Were you confident? What were your thoughts on that?
No, it really wasn't like a big thing for me. I was just trying to write about things that I like. I was just trying to help people to write better. I was just trying to further my interest in these fields. And really, that was it. I did not intend to focus on the numbers. I did not intend to have this big website, which is why, like I said, you know, for the first year and a half, I didn't track any numbers. I just began tracking our numbers in April of 2020. And before that, we had been working since November of 2018. And this year and a half in between, I have no clue how many numbers we did, how many articles we published. I have no clue how many people we reached, how many website views we had. So numbers was something which I really didn't focus a lot on, but it was really good to have people see our content. It was really good to see the work of teenagers like you and I reach tens of thousands of people. So yeah, it's really amazing. I hadn't expected it, and it's something that even I'm quite baffled about. Like, we're just a group of teenagers who write about stuff, and we have so many people seeing our content and so many people who are interacting with our content. And I'm just glad that we have a space for people to talk about historical issues. We have a place for people to talk about economics, and hopefully that inspires them to A, become better writers, and inspires them to be further better their interest in these two fields.
So in terms of the website and the people who make it happen in general, other than you, how many writers and contributors about do you have?
Okay. We have about 40 people in our team, which includes people from, you know, all around the world. We have people who are like freshmen in high school, all the way up to people who are doing their masters. So we have like a diverse age group. We have a diverse people. We have a diverse crowd of people from India, from the US, from Singapore, from Hong Kong, from different countries in the Middle East and Europe. So yeah, we have about 30 to 40 people, and that number sometimes changes. So it's not like a permanent constant team. We always have people who join us, and we also always have people who have to leave because of, you know, high school commitments, tests, and all of those things. So it's not really a permanent team. But as of this moment, when we're recording, we have about 40 people.
And how do you manage all those people contributing to one single website?
We have different team heads. So we have marketing team, we have writing team, we have a graphic design team. And initially I was leading all of these teams, but then it got way too hectic for me. And I realized the importance of delegating tasks. So for the past year or so, we have had marketing heads, we've had graphic design heads. We also have a new editor in chief, not new, but like we've had editor in chiefs to lead our writing team, our editorial board, which edits the work of the writers. So it's just been a lot of delegating out the tasks. And then I stay in touch with all of our heads who lead these teams on a monthly basis. So we have team meetings on a monthly basis where we discuss how the work's going on, if they have any issues, if they, you know, so yeah, it's basically delegating the task to different team leads who ensured that their team does well. And yeah, that's how we work.
And I have two questions, so I'll just put in one. Is every team head and writer, is that a volunteer-based thing and that's just responsible? And then the second part of the question is, how often do you take in new contributors? And this is kind of like, if there's people interested listening, how can they interact with Tidings Media and get involved if they're interested?
Okay. Firstly, so it's completely on a voluntary basis. We don't have any paid work. Unfortunately, I haven't made a single dollar out of all of our work in this past year because, you know, having a website with ads is really bad. When I go to news websites, having those paywalls, having those ads, is really frustrating.
For sure.
I will definitely not be putting up ads. And other than that, I didn't really think of this as a way to make money. It was just like a way to talk about things that I wanted to talk about and just discuss things that I wanted to discuss. So we didn't really have, I didn't really have any motive to make money, and we haven't made money, which is why all of our work is on a voluntary basis. And secondly, you talked about, so we usually have our team forms out, but as of this moment, we don't have it open. Maybe if you see this or hear this after like mid-June when we are recording, then hopefully we might have new forms up. But at this moment we aren't, because you know for a while that we are going to Minerva soon, and it's going to be really hard to manage a large team, which is why I put that that team form on hold, because it's going to be tough to handle a lot of people, and temporarily we've like paused new people from joining it.
And final words onto the Tidings Media topic. Do you have any advice for people who are interested in pursuing creative work and educational work in publishing like you have done so far?
Yeah, I think two quick things. A, just start. I mean, you don't have to be an expert. I still don't know how to write. I still don't know much about economics and history. It's just like a process where I'm documenting things that I'm learning along the way. And whether you are an artist, whether you are a musician, whether you are somebody who likes physics or science or biology, anything that you want, you know, you don't have to be an expert. Just start documenting your journey, and say you read an article, or say you like a song, or say you draw an art piece, just share it with the world. And I think in that process of documenting your own progress, your own journey, you're going to be learning a lot of things along the way, and you'll be improving in your own craft along the way. So the necessary condition that you should have before you start. It's not that you have to be an expert, but rather you should have interest in that field. You should be willing to make content. You should be willing to practice on that craft of yours again and again. And only that is how I personally believe that you can become better. Like even for this podcast, you know, I have my own podcast. I'm a really bad podcaster, but I'm interested in talking to people. And I'm slowly and gradually, you know, that I will get better. So my condition was not to be like a good speaker when I was starting out, but eventually I think I'll get there. If not, that's completely fine too. I'm just doing what I like. And if somebody else likes it too, listen to it, share it. And yeah, just have the ambition that, you know, don't start something which you do not really like. It could be anything, especially in this like age of internet. What we've seen is that you can literally do anything and be good at it. It doesn't have to be academic. It doesn't have to be related to writing or anything. So just have that ambition and continue, because there will be times where you don't want to write, where you don't want to do the work, but it's because of your interest that you will get up and work on it. And it's because of that interest that, you know, even when your work is not seen by anyone, you'll still keep on going, because you're not doing it for the numbers. You're rather doing it for your own self and your own interest in that field. So just have that ambition. And if you have that, then there's no reason to not start something new.
I will give your speaking on this 10 out of 10. So I will already say that you are a good speaker, because that was so inspirational. And you can see my notes over here. I was literally writing all your good phrases over here for myself included, because, you know, it's kind of hard to find that inspiration, I guess, or confidence to get going. So it's so exciting to see you doing it, regardless of, first of all, not making money, not caring about the numbers, just doing it because you have pure joy for the subject, and that's inspiring. 10 out of 10. And before we move on to the next section of this podcast episode, how can we find Tidings Media?
Sure, so you can go to our website called www.tidingsmedia.org, and we're also on Facebook by the same name, Tidings Media. We're also on LinkedIn. We're also on Instagram. On Instagram, our handle is called @tidingsmedia.org, because somebody else took Tidings Media. our handle is called tidingsmedia.org, and you can find us there. We also have a podcast. The podcast can be found on all major platforms called like Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. If you're looking for the exact link for to the different platforms, you can go to the website page called podcast. So tidingsmedia.org/podcast is where you can find all those links. And yeah, I think that's about it. The podcast is not very creative. It's titled as The Tidings Podcast. Quite simple, very basic. And yeah, you can find that pretty much everywhere.
And for those of you listening, all the links to the main website and Instagram will be in the show notes below this episode. So that'll be a really easy way to get to Yasha's website. So next up is more normal-ish kind of things. It's basically school. So if you don't know, well, you should know, because if you're listening to this, you should have listened to my last episode of the podcast where I said where I was going to school. And if you didn't, then you know what you're going to be doing after this episode, I guess. So anyways, I'm going to Minerva, school site KGI, and Yash is as well. So Minerva is kind of a different school. It's not traditional, I would say. So I have a few questions for Yash and how he found Minerva, why he chose to go to Minerva, because it's definitely abnormal. So the first question for you, why Minerva?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think I started telling you about how I found Minerva, and that would be, you know, I think pretty much everyone, you know, even at our cohort, first heard about Minerva from Anjali Tate on YouTube.
Oh yes,
somebody watches a lot of like productivity content on YouTube, so So that's how I came across Updated Jade, like a year or two ago. I'm not really sure, but that was a while ago. But that didn't make me interested in applying, because in my head, without any research, I thought this was like a really rich school. You know, you had to pay so much money to go here and do and travel all of these places. So I never really considered applying. It was only in December of 2020, which was just like 6 months ago, that I actually considered applying, because I had a friend from India who got in. So once we were talking, he was like, you know, I got into this place and you should check that out. And that's when I went to the site, learned more about it, and then I considered applying. So that's the story of how I learned about Minerva and I applied. Now, why Minerva is a really good question. I think the main thing would be, you know, the traveling. That's like the main selling point, I think, or the first selling point, which is basically that we will be traveling in a different country every semester, which is really exciting. We'll be traveling to London, we'll be traveling to Berlin, Seoul, Taiwan, Hyderabad, Argentina, San Francisco. That's really exciting, because I think, you know, when I first went to the site after hearing about it in December, when I just saw like the front page of these countries on the map, which just really clicked with me, because I'm a history nerd, as we've already talked about that. We've already established that. So I'm somebody who really loves reading about the World War, the Cold War, and, you know, all of these countries are so historically rich that I'm really excited to, you know, even before Minerva, it was even before I found out about this place, I had this on my life, like, bucket list that I have to go to Berlin, that I have to go to Seoul at some point. Those are just things like that I've always dreamed about, because I want to see the remains of Second World War, the Cold War, the Korean War, and the memorial and the Holocaust memorial in Berlin. That's something that I've been reading about. That's something that interests me, that we should learn about. And just seeing these places in real, just seeing the Berlin Wall in real, something that was really exciting for me. So that was the first thing that really clicked out to me, that I will get a chance to, you know, check off those things off my bucket list and actually go to these places. That was the first thing. Secondly, when I went further into the website and I was learning more about it, I think the active learning was a really big thing for me, because coming from the traditional national Indian curriculum, where we just told to mug up things, you know, you don't have to learn anything, you don't have to understand anything, just mug up the facts and you can be the top student in the curriculum here. And I have a bad memory, so I struggle with mugging up things. And in my like high school experience, I've never, you know, if you were to ask me for things that I've learned, like knowledge wise, I haven't really learned much, because I just studied one day before the test, took the test, scored well. That was the end of it. You know, I was never really encouraged, or I was never really into learning just for learning. I am somebody who's kind of, I would say, I think that I'm kind of dumb, because I have lots of questions. I don't really understand things very easily. I have lots of questions. Even if we were to learn something new, I'm always thinking about new things. I'm always thinking about, why is this happening? You know, I was once asked something as simple as, you know, the Pythagoras theorem in math. I would ask questions like, why is it happening the way it is happening? And for me, having that discussion with your professor, having that discussion and those seminar style teaching at Minerva, something which really clicked with me, because I felt like I really had the chance to actually learn things, not just for the sake of taking tests, but actually learn them. And I would have the chance to not just be in a lecture hall with 1,000 other kids and just listen to the teacher, but rather I would have a chance to speak. I would have a chance to debate, discuss, and learn new things and actually get out my doubts. So while I cannot really attest to that yet, because we haven't really been there, but if things are the way that I've heard, then I'm really excited. is I want to be learning things that I can actually learn and I can remember for a while, unlike the things that I learned in high school that I cannot even recall. So I want to learn for the sake of learning. I want to travel to these places. I want to. So those are the main two reasons, I would say. Oh, also, I forgot probably another very important thing. Whenever I was need blind, so that was really key for me. I needed a lot of financial aid, and as an international, especially as an Indian, it's really hard to get financial aid in the US. So the fact that Minerva was a need blind institution that met your full financial need was a major thing that led me to apply here.
First of all, a lot of those reasons I extremely resonate with. Honestly, traveling is so important, not only for the bucket list reasons, but the educational purposes that come behind learning new cultures, exploring different places, and being in the real world versus a college campus. First of all, I have to note one thing. You said that you thought that you were dumb because you asked lots of questions, and I just have a brief reflection on that from my own schooling experience. I feel like there's a stigma around asking questions as being a bad thing that indicates that you don't understand content, which I find very frustrating because I think that a question in more ways shows that you're engaging with the content. Like you were saying, the Pythagorean theorem for math, it's kind of like if you don't ask those questions, you can understand it in the fact that the people who do well in straightforward, normal classrooms with the people who don't ask the questions and just kind of follow the instructions. And asking the question of why is digging beyond the following the instructions and just kind of going with the flow. It's a deeper understanding. So I feel like people should be encouraged to ask questions and question not only the world around them, but even the small minute things in a classroom to actually understand what's going on versus just following an order of directions.
Yeah, definitely. You know, basically what I think how I work as a person is that I generally don't have like the foundational knowledge. So if I'm learning something, I'm going to forget everything. It's not something which I do actively. It's just like natural to me that I don't remember other stuff. I'm just learning it from scratch. So I'm going to be questioning like the basic principles of what they're talking about. I'm going to be questioning the assumptions that we've taken, like why is it happening the way it is happening, and is it really necessary why we are taking it this way? You know, if I don't really read a lot, and you know this, but when I do read, I have lots of questions. So, you know, if you were to like check out my books, I'm going to have like questions on every page on the side because I'm like, why are we taking this assumption, or why are we thinking about it this way when it could also be taken that way? So I, you know, whenever I'm studying economics, I have a couple of people who I reach out to, like people who are much more knowledgeable about economics than me. And whenever I'm learning something new, I ask them like really almost dumb question, like why is it happening this way? I don't get it. You know, why can't it be that way? So, yeah, I think it's just, I'm not really sure if it's a good thing or a bad thing, but that's just the way that I am, that if you were to teach me something, I'm going to ask you so many questions to really get that topic. Otherwise, I would just not understand it. If I were to be in a lecture hall, listen from just start to finish, I would have so many questions that I would probably not understand most of the things by the end of it because of those knowledge gaps in between that I haven't been able to clear out. So yeah, I'm not sure if it's a good thing or a bad thing, or if it's smart or it's dumb, but that's just the way that I work.
I think from my perspective, asking questions in the way that you were phrasing it and questioning even the foundations is kind of essential to making any innovations, because if we just kind of assume that, oh, a horse is the only way to get around, then we're never going to move beyond that into something like a motorized vehicle or a plane. So I feel like having people like you who are able to think they don't understand, but really just question the foundations of is how society is going to be able to extend beyond that. And that for me was a big reason why Minerva was important, because again, that seminar thinking forces you to have to engage and think about things from those different perspectives, like you said that you would write in your books. And I think for me, I'm not, and this is interesting because from my perspective, I wish I asked more questions. I wish I didn't just like write down the notes and just go with the order. And that's what I'm kind of retraining myself in my brain to do, is to think about those different perspectives immediately rather than just kind of breezing by and assuming things are the way that they are.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's almost like when I'm reading something and I come across something which I don't understand, I make questions out of them on my book, and I don't really read further until I've like understood that thing that I wasn't sure about, or that thing that I thought could be done in a different way. And it's kind of interesting because, you know, I've actually reached out to book authors to disagree with them. Like, I was reading this book called The Armchair Economist, where there was an example that paying somebody for ads is irrational, because if, say, a model or a celebrity is using a product, if they are endorsing a product, then it's not going to be changing the quality of the product, you know. So companies paying people to have ads is irrational. That's what the author said. And I was like, really? Is that really the case? I mean, so how I thought about it, because of my like little bit of experience and interest in marketing, is that the reason why we are paying for those ads is not because it improves the quality of the product, but it's just for increasing the outreach of the product. You know, you could have the best thing in the world, but if people don't know about it, then it doesn't really matter. You know, say Cristiano Ronaldo posts an ad of his Nike boots and Nike pays him $1 million. So the goal is not to improve the quality of the product, but the goal is to have more buys, or the goal is to let people know that there is something called this, which this celebrity is using. And what I was thinking, and the way that I was thinking about it, is that even if out of those 200 million people who follow him, if even 1%, 0.1% of the people were to actually buy that shoe, they would make so much more money than the $1 million that they actually paid, that it almost makes sense to pay people to have that outreach, to have that popularity in your product, to have that word of mouth. You know, when you see somebody making that post, you talk amongst your friends that I saw this post, have you seen that post? And so it makes sense to have sponsorships, to have advertisements. And I didn't really agree with the author there. They never really replied to my mail. That's a different thing. But I did write them a very long email explaining why I'm thinking about it this way. So yeah, I'm just like actively reading, and if I don't understand something, I make questions out of them, and I try to reach out to people, you know, people who know more about me on that field, to get a better understanding of why this is the way it is, and if it can be in a different way that I'm thinking.
And see, that's exactly phrasing what I want to think about. Basically, you captivate exactly what I'm trying to get towards. So thank you for sharing your kind of methodology, and I'm going to try to apply that into my own life. So I'm going to kind of divert the conversation a little bit to how did your parents think about you going to Minerva and the United States for college?
So going to the U.S. wasn't a surprise, because I've had that goal for a couple of years now. When I was in grade 11, I was aiming to study in the U.S. because of like the drastic increase in the quality of education, the quality of life, the opportunities as compared to studying in India. So because of those reasons, my parents were like, sure, if you want to apply, go for it. You know, it's good to go through that competitive phase of seeing if you can get in there, and if you can, and if you can get financial aid, which fits our like budget, which fits our financial situation, then you know there's no harm in going to the US or going to Minerva. That's actually a challenge, because and it's still a challenge. You know, my parents are still not convinced. My mother's really worried about how will you eat, what will you eat, how are you going to be cooking, and you know you're not used to adulting. Like, I cannot cook, I don't clean my own house, and there I would have to. So it's not been easy, because Minerva was so like untraditional, Minerva was so different. So convincing them for starting in the US has been was not a difficult challenge, because it took a while, but they understood the benefits of going there, and it made sense if it wasn't really, you know, breaking our budget. So since like grade 11, my parents were convinced that if I can get financial aid, then they would really be fine with me going there. But with Minerva, it once again took a lot of challenge to explain them the new curriculum, how we're going to be learning, how we're going to be living. And they had lots of concerns. But at the end of the day, what I am personally keen on is that, sure, Minerva's not going to be easy. I get it. You know, the education is going to be hard. The adulting part of it is going to be really hard and challenging, but something which you have to do. You know, once you've gone through that phase, once you've gone through those challenges, once you've lived on your own, done things on your own, and also managed studying and working part time on your own, the amount of personal growth that I'm going to have is probably going to be worth all of that challenge for, you know, lifetime. So, I've always liked to do things that I'm scared of, and that's not supposed to be like something motivational, because I get like really nervous, I get panic attacks doing these things, but it's just for the thrill of it, that if I don't, if something makes me uncomfortable, I'm more intrigued to go for it. You know, that has been something which I've been following for a long while, for a lot of things in Model UN, because of, you know, different challenges and debates. So even at this moment, I'm kind of scared of the experience of how going to be like, we have to study like 10 hours a day, we have to work and get our own groceries, we have to go and live on our own. But you know, it's going to be fun. We will be doing it together. I'm not going to be alone, and I'm excited.
Yes, it's. I think you made up a great point that I'm gonna have to tell to my parents because they're some of them. My mom not fully on board at all with Minerva, but like you said, you have. We all are gonna have to adult at some point in our lives, so might as well do it now. And maybe it seems overwhelming to do everything kind of at once, but I'm also ready for a challenge, and I want to be challenged. And again, like you said, we're doing it together, so it's gonna be. We're gonna have some support systems. You and I are gonna cook vegan food together, so if you're worried about that, you got that to look forward to. So I feel like we're gonna do it. We have like over 100, I don't even, like 200 more students who are gonna suffer with us, and in that way, it's gonna be exciting and enriching in so many ways. And to backtrack real quick, you touched on this a little bit. But how, so what will happen to Tidings Media when you're at college?
Oh, that's a really tough question. I am using this summer break to figure out how that works, because I really do want to continue it. I really do want to continue our work. It's going to be really hard, because I personally won't have the time to lead everything. And the problem with our work being unpaid is that I really cannot have like someone to lead the team when I'm not there. And you know, everybody has their own lives, they have their own interests, they have their own schools, they have their own commitments, that somebody could potentially take over for like a month, 2 months, 3 months, not more than that. So what do we do after that phase. What do we do when somebody has exams? What do we do when somebody has another opportunity that they want to work towards? And, you know, even for our team leaders, they work really well. They are working really well, but it's not permanent, you know. They are also our students, and I would completely understand, and it makes sense if, say, once their college starts, once their exam starts, once the academic workload or they have other commitments outside of tidings that increase, that they have to leave. So it's difficult to keep this on going. And I've really tried to find somebody who can take over instead of my place, but it's been hard because probably the issue is that looking for someone who has the same like interest in economics as me, because this thing does not work out if the person does not like these subjects, you know. And B, it doesn't work out if it's somebody, once again, who's the 12th graders, because even they, once they get into college, they would have a really hard time to keep this forward. So it's been hard to find people who are A, interested in the subjects, and B, can commit for like at least a year. Because, you know, if we were to change our things after a year, that's fine. But having the commitment of a year is really hard for students like you and I, especially once if the work is unpaid. So I'm really not sure at this moment. The site is always going to be up there, but the question is whether how active will we be uploading new content. I'm thinking that, you know, we might have to stop the teamwork because it's going to be really hard to manage the team with Courage, and I want to continue, and I might continue tidying this just like a personal project, you know, once we are in school on the weekends or once a month or twice a month. I want to write about things that I'm thinking about, so I will be contributing on my own. I will hopefully be continuing my podcast because that doesn't really take a lot of time, and on the weekend or like once a month or twice a month, I want to speak with people because we're going to be in San Francisco, you know, we will be in touch with excellent faculty, we will be in touch with excellent students around us who I can talk to. So I hopefully want to continue that, and I'm not really sure if we will be continuing the entire team-based work. We might have to move that to something like only for the summer break when I have time to, you know, manage 30, 40, 50 people's work. So it's really not really confirmed at the moment, you know. Hopefully we have things figured out by the end of the summer.
Yeah, so I hope Tiny Media stays. And I think that you'll figure it out. And if it has to consolidate for a little bit, that's better than giving it up altogether because you've already made so much progress. And obviously, a lot of people have found your content useful and valuable. So hopefully, that will all be settled.
Yeah. I mean, stopping the work is not even an option. Okay, the question is just how actively will we be putting out content? Best case, we find someone who leads and, you know, there's no change at all. We will be putting out 3-4 pieces of content each week. Worst case, we move to, you know, worst case, it's just me who's putting out content and we're going to be putting out like 2-3 pieces of content a month. So yeah, that change is something which I'm not sure about right now, but we're definitely not closing for sure, you know, so that's not even an option.
Okay, that's awesome and good. So now into our third and final and brief section, because I actually have a band concert to rush to in 10 minutes. So, life in India, a brief overview from Yash. Yeah.
Wow, that's a really broad question.
I know, that's why I'm going to specify. Rephrase. A brief overview of life in India, specifically the academic system before college with Yash.
Sure. So there's two national curriculums in India. I did one called CBSE, which is the national curriculum here and how it works is that you have compulsory subjects until grade 10th. So you'll be studying mandatory English, you'll be studying mandatory maths, science, social sciences, and a language class, which is Hindi for me. You also have the option to take French, but I don't. But I preferred Hindi because that's almost easier. So I stuck with that. And after your grade 10th, you have the option to specialize for the last 2 years of high school. So we have three streams, which we call them, called the sciences, the commerce, and humanities. So science means you'll be studying compulsory physics, chemistry, and you have the option to either take math if you want to go for something like engineering, or you can also take biology if you want to go into medicine. So you have the sciences with the options for choosing between math and biology. Next, we have the commerce, which is where you study accountancy, business studies, and if you want to say, you know, go into business or in that field of business administration, then you take this route of studying commerce. And then lastly, you have humanities, which is what I studied, wherein we study history, political science, economics. We also have the option to take up psychology, which I couldn't. And yeah, so we have three different streams after grade 10th, which we have to choose.
And then in India, is there public and private schools or just one or the other?
Oh, yeah, it's definitely, we have both kinds of schools, and private schools are a lot more popular. I studied in a private school, and public schools are not really that popular.
Is there, in terms of education in the high school age range, I suppose, is there a difference in quality of education between public and private? And is privates, do they range in economic, how expensive they are, I guess?
Yeah, definitely. So I think there is a large difference between the teaching in public and private. And I think the reasons of that are because the public schools or the government operated schools are not funded well, so you don't really have resources, you don't really have lots of funding for teacher salaries. As a result, private schools are a lot more popular because they have higher pay for the teachers, they have higher fees for the schooling. And as a result, you get a lot more resources, you get comparatively better teachers. I wouldn't say that even the teachers in private schools are the best, but if you were to compare, they're better. So, which is why you have a lot higher quality of education in private schools. And I would say that even though, I'm not sure if it's like, private schooling in the US is like exclusive or very expensive, but here in India, almost everybody in the middle class can afford to go to private schools, so it's not extremely expensive. If I were to like give you the numbers, it's going to be like less than $1,000 for the entire year is what the typical private school in India costs. So it's something which most middle income households can afford, and I being one of them. So for the most part, people of the majority of high school people go to these private institutions.
That's actually really interesting, because a typical school in my area, for a private school, public school is obviously free. Public schools are funded inequally by the region you're in. So fortunately, I'm in a district that is really well funded, so I'm getting an equal or better education than a private schools. And our private schools cost upwards of $15,000 a year. I don't know how anyone can afford that in the middle class, even though some people choose to send their kids there. They do offer scholarships, but also you can get just as good as an education, in my personal opinion, in a public school. Note that I also go to a public school, so that could be slightly biased, but I feel that I've had successful opportunities that way. Also, another thing to note is that our teachers in public schools tend to get paid more than private schools, significantly, which is interesting. I think it's because in the US they have something called tenure, which basically ensures teachers are harder to fire in public schools, and their earnings increase over time the longer they stay teaching. But that's just an interesting contrast just between two different regions, between India and the US, how private and public kind of have a swapped role in education.
Yeah, that's really cool. And I am all down for this kind of education. I hope that our schools can be more funded. We can have more opportunities for private school, public school, and that we have better teachers, we have better pay, we have better resources. And that, you know, even though this amount is not a lot, but it's still a lot for, I would say, a lot of the population here, wherein people who have to go to public school should not have to go through a bad schooling. So we should definitely have more and better funding for high schooling or even primary schooling here in India.
I completely agree. And it's actually shocking how stark the contrast is where you are for public schooling. So basically, I live in the outskirts of the city, like in the first suburb area houses around the central city of where I live. But in the city, the schooling is dramatically lower quality. And it's kind of there's a lot of back history and social justice issues regarding that. We have one of the highest segregated cities in the country, which is not something I like to say proudly. It's not proud at all, honestly. And as a result, it's also significantly lower income in the city. So there's a definite income inequality between schools. So it's really unfortunate that in the US, if you have a lower income area, the schooling is also of a lower quality. So hopefully, again, the same thing could be applied here, that public school is public and good for every area, not just the rich neighborhoods.
Yeah, so like there's definitely like posh schools in India which cost like $10,000, $15,000 a year, but that's not the norm. Those are like exceptional schools which cost that much. But the ordinarily, I would say, private schools here cost like $1,000 approximately. That's like the general thing, at least where I'm from. And if you want to go for like posh education, like the elite education, then that would cost like $10,000, $15,000 a year. I've seen one of the schools having fees of up to $20,000 a year. So that's how high it can get, but that's not the norm.
Well, we've just about come to the end of the episode. Thank you, Yash, for coming and joining us. This was a super exciting episode, and we covered so many topics and ideas and concepts. And before I close out this episode, do you have any final words for the audience?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not really sure what else to say, because we've already covered lots of different things. But if you like my work, check that out. If you want to talk to me, feel free to reach out to me. I'm very open to talking to new people. I'm always down for that. And if you need any help that I can probably help out with, feel free to reach out for that. And yeah, I'm just excited to study at Minerva. And, you know, let's hope that we can start together. I might have to start a bit late because of COVID in India and the embassy issue here. But I'm staying optimistic, and hopefully we can have more like in-person engagement than this virtual one. And, you know, Stephanie and I, we can partners, because we are vegetarians and we will be looking for food together we will be looking for. We'll be eating food together, so just excited for, our upcoming food adventures together.
Yes, I'm so excited. We're gonna see each other in person, which is literally insane and exciting. I've already talked to Yash multiple times about how overwhelmingly I'm excited for this journey that we're about to go on together. So, thank you, Yash, for joining us today. This was Stephanie, and
This was Yashvardhan.
you just listened to WTF is Up with Gen Z, and we just discovered Yash's media website, his college experience that's going to happen eventually, and his general overview of education and life in India very quickly. So we just discovered that and explored it. And you can see us listen next time in the next episode coming soon. And if you want to see or listen to more episodes or stay in touch with either Jesse or I or Yash, there will be more information in the show notes below. If you want to check out the podcast, anywhere you search a podcast, you can type in WTF is up with Gen Z, GENZ, and you'll find it. And if you want us to follow our Instagram, that is at WTF Gen Z. And if you want to find Yash's Instagram, my Instagram, or Jesse's Instagram, that'll just be in the show notes because I don't want to say anything more in this episode. So yeah, thank you so much for joining us and listening today. See you next episode.